noon for the Orange County Water District Water Issues Committee meeting, Board of Directors, Bob Porter. And with that, I'd like to ask, I call her President Green, President of both CWD and President of Aqua as well, to lead us in the pledge.
Everyone will put the right hand over their heart. I pledge allegiance to the
The
flag
flag of the United States of America,
and to the
to the
republic
republic
which
for which it
stands,
stands,
one
one
nation,
nation, under God,
liberty,
indivisible,
and
with
justice.
liberty and justice for all.
Williams here.
And with that, roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Nguyen. Director Yeo. Director Tran.
Here.
Director Wiegand.
Here.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Sheldon. Director Meeks. Director Amezcua.
Present.
Director Green.
Yes.
You do have a quorum of your committee.
Thank you. Mr. General Manager, were there any items to speak to that could have been agendized?
There are none.
Thank you. And with that, we are at visitor participation. We have a good crowd here today. Does anyone want to address the I realize this meeting is the only thing between a lot of us and lunch. So with that, there's no one online, no hands raised. So. Okay, thanks. Sometimes I forget to check that. We are at our consent calendar and items number 1 through 8. Does anyone have a comment or wish to pull any of those items? Waiting on someone here. Okay. With that, thank you. Motion by
Never mind. Actually, I can't make the motion. Never mind.
There's an opening for another motion.
I can't.
Well, I'll make the motion, Madam Clerk. Am I a voting member now?
We've got to do the math on it here. Go ahead.
It's Sheldon.
Yeah, that's good. Director Sheldon's.
Was there good. A second? I'm sorry, I didn't catch
there's,
that.
There's been no second yet.
No.
I'll second.
Great. Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Valerie's has to be Dennis, Eric.
This is Dennis. I'll second. I believe I'm the first alternate. That helps?
Yes.
Thank you, Director.
First and second. Roll call. Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Tran.
Aye.
Director Wiegand?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. The matters for consideration today, we start out with item number 9. And that is the amendment and renewal of Santa Ana Watershed Association Agreement number 1369. This will be presented by John Kennedy.
It will be presented by our Director of Natural Resources, Cheryl Parsons.
Ah, yes. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for having me this afternoon. I'm here today to talk about the expiration of an agreement between OCWD and the Santa Ana Watershed Association, also known as SAWA, and how the district plans to address the effects of this expiration. The agreement that's expired is agreement number 1594. Now there are two different agreements with SAWA that I'm going to be discussing throughout this presentation. Thank you. And I'm going to distinguish between them by referring to their agreement numbers. So 1594 is the agreement that is expired. Throughout this course of this presentation, I'm going to break down what was covered in that agreement and what effects its expiration has caused. But the two ultimate recommendations we will be requesting today are: one, to cover all Arundo removal work under Agreement 1369 with SAWA. And two, due to the removal of the OCWD SAWA Field Personnel Program, sometimes referred to as the 50-50 program, that the environmental specialist in that role become a dedicated OCWD position, which would increase headcount by 0.5 at no additional cost to the district. Again, the agreement that's expired is agreement number 1594 between OCWD and SAWA, which was originally adopted in 2013 for a term of 10 years and then extended in 2023 for an additional year, while new language was to be developed to improve billing transparency. There are four main services that are covered in this agreement. Number one is the removal of Arundo. That is Arundo, also known as giant reed, which is a highly invasive, water-intensive plant that has a high regrowth rate and requires continual treatment. The second service is cowbird removal, which is the trapping and removal of the invasive species, the brown-headed cowbird, which is a bird that parasitizes the nest of our endangered species, the leaf bells vireo. The third service is vegetation management at Sunny Slope Creek, which is where the district works to meet its regulatory requirements regarding the endangered fish, the Santa Ana sucker. And the last was the creation of this OCWD SAWA field personnel program, which consists of two employees, one SAWA employee and one OCWD employee, who spend 50% of their time doing work for each organization. Now, this agreement expired in June of 2024 and was not renewed. Instead, we propose the following alternatives for each of these services. For cowbird removal and for Sunny Slope Creek vegetation work, we'll be going through a formal bid process to evaluate new vendors. SAWA will be included in this as well other biological consultants and habitat maintenance contractors. And all proposals will be evaluated based on costs before new agreements are drafted. The OCWD SAWA field personnel program will be eliminated, and our alternative for that will be presented in the second half of this presentation. And for Arundo removal, we're going to request to cover that under agreement number 1369, again with SAWA, for an additional year and use that as a bridge to a watershed-wide strategic Arundo working group. Once that group is off the ground and running, then all the Arundo removal services will be transferred to them to manage. Let's dive into the service and this agreement a little bit deeper. This new agreement, number 1369, was authorized back in 2019 and covered Arundo removal in the Prado Basin as part of the Santa Ana River Conservation and Conjunctive Use Program, or SARCUP grant. And this grant was used to remove Arundo throughout the basin, again, because Arundo is a very water-intensive plant, and removing just 1 acre of Arundo could save you 20 acre-feet of water per year. As previously presented, SAPA, the Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority, which is separate from SAWA, is applying for a grant to start a watershed-wide Arundo removal program to eliminate this invasive species throughout the watershed. Our recommendation, then, is to renew agreement number 1369 instead of agreement number 1594 for 1 year as a bridge to this planned watershed-wide Arundo removal program spearheaded by SAPA, and include additional language to improve billing transparency and additional oversight by OCWD staff. The other major change that must be addressed following the expiration of this old agreement is that involving the OCWD SAWA field personnel program. This was a fairly complicated employment structure in which OCWD and SAWA both paid for the full cost of one employee each. On the OCWD side, we'll call this employee A, and on the SAWA side, we'll call this employee B. In the case of OCWD's employee A, this was a full-time benefited position. And according to this agreement, each organization got 50% of each employee's time. So although OCWD was paying 100% of employee A's costs, they were getting 50% of their time, but also 50% of employee B's time from SAWA. On the SAWA side, the same situation. They were receiving 50% of employee B's time and 50% of employee A's time. So each organization was paying for one employee, but getting half of the time of two employees. Logistically, this would work by in half of the time the OCWD employee would go do work for SAWA, and half of the time a SAWA employee would come and do work for OCWD. And then to make it a little more complicated, OCWD would then invoice SAWA for the time employee A spent at SAWA, and then SAWA would invoice OCWD for the time employee B spent at OCWD. I'll let that whole diagram sit up there for a little bit so everyone can digest it. But to summarize again, OCWD was paying for employee A, but getting half of employee A and employee B's time. SAWA was paying for employee B and getting half of employee B and A's time. And we were invoicing each other for the time each employee spent at the other organization. An important thing to note here is that even though we were paying for a full-time employee, including their benefits, because we only got 50% of their time in our official OCWD headcount, this employee counted as just half a headcount. So instead of this situation, we propose OCWD pays for employee A and gets 100% of employee A's time. SAWA pays for employee B and gets 100% of employee B's time. It's straightforward and it's simple. The only issue here is, again, that issue of headcount. Again, historically, employee A counted as just half a headcount because they were only spending half of their time doing work for OCWD. But now in this scenario, they would be spending 100% of their time doing work for OCWD, and the headcount should be changed to reflect that. And changing this headcount might actually help meet some regulatory requirements that we have as well. So per our 2020 biological opinion, which is the document from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that allows us to hold water behind Prado Dam at 505 elevation year-round, it states that we must have 4 full-time equivalent employees monitoring Lee Spells Vero in the Prado Basin. Previously, we've met this equivalency through a combination of OCWD employees and contract employees. So we have 2 full-time environmental specialists at OCWD, a principal and a senior, and we had the OCWD member in that SAWA field personnel, who again was only counting as half the headcount there. We can move over to the contract side and use the SAWA position as another half, and then use a contract and a temp specialist to fill in the remaining gaps there and reach our 4.0 equivalent employee count. But now, with the expiration of this agreement, we no longer have access to the SAWA side. So we've lost half of an employee there. So we dropped us to 3.5 full-time equivalent employees, not the 4 full-time employees that we need. If that environmental specialist in our OCWD SAWA field personnel position became a dedicated OCWD employee, spending 100% of their time with us, then we could increase their headcount to 1.0, and there will bring us up to the equivalent of 4.0 full-time employees. And the good thing about this is that the cost to OCWD would remain the same. There's no additional cost here. We're already paying for that full-time position and their benefits. The thing that would be stopped would be the invoices between OCWD and SAWA, and the time spent processing and sending these invoices would be saved. So there are no additional costs associated with this increase in headcount. So that's the last part in our plan to address the effects of this expiration of Agreement 1594. So to summarize here, our recommendations are to renew agreement number 1369 instead of 1594 for a Rundle removal for 1 year till July 2025 as a bridge to the planned watershed-wide Rundle removal program spearheaded by SAPA, and include additional language to improve drilling transparency. And then to meet the regulatory requirements from the 2020 biological opinion, we would increase the headcount of the environmental specialist in that OCWD SAWA field personnel position by 0.5 to 1. So with that, happily take any questions.
Wow, that was quite a description of
of musical chairs and new math for HR. Wow. Anyone?
Questions or any clarification? All right, well, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. I was waiting for others.
Okay. Please go ahead.
So, with all that said, it sounds like we're paying more. We're going to have to replace the 50% being paid for by the other entity. Is that correct?
The 50% that we were getting invoiced, or that we were invoicing them. Yeah. So the 2 invoices.
Okay. Thank you for answering. So, but you explained that we were paying that, but it was the half-time, full-time situation. So there's really a net no change.
Yes.
And then my other question, why was the agreement not extended?
We wanted to evaluate different opportunities for all those 4 services as well, reevaluate our Arundo removal program and make that move to that strategic watershed-wide program. And I think both OCWD and SAWA were not 100% on board with this position working in this way anymore. So going with a different agreement and a different approach for those services allowed us to move away from this 50-50 position and look at moving towards that watershed-wide group for our Rundle removal needs.
Are we taking on any additional work that was in the, or are we taking on any additional work?
No, we weren't. We're actually getting less work here by moving on, getting rid of the invoicing between those two groups. And then we have removed some other services as well from older agreements.
Thank you for the summary.
Thank you.
That what was impressive to me was the expense of monitoring the Lise Bell's vireo up to four FTEs now, right?
Yes.
What is the status of that offhand? Just are the populations increasing or decreasing?
Yeah, we actually had a record year this year due to the two good water years we had. So the most ever, I think we're at 761 vireo in the basin, which is the most ever.
Well, that reduces the cost per bird. Requires more people to monitor.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I do have another question. You said four full-time employees just to monitor?
Yes, that's in our biological opinion from the Fish and Wildlife Service.
And what do they work out of the headquarters, out of the field office there at the basin?
Yes, in the field office at Prado.
And this just isn't during like the nesting season of like the 8 weeks from like April to June or May to July. It's not that. It's 365, yeah. Right?
Yes, they do the nesting surveys from March through September is the nesting season. And then in the September through February time, there's an increased reporting load that we've seen because of all these requirements. So they work on reporting and getting all that, the data situated for us.
What is that time period from, I mentioned from like May to July or April to June, there's like a 60 or 90 day particular time period for something. You know what that is?
No, I know that the nesting season that is required for us to be out there and looking for nests starts in the middle of March and goes through the middle of September. I'm not sure what other time period there would be there.
Okay. My biologist is okay. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks much for the presentation. Our minds will be swimming for a while after that. We are now at... item number 10. Oh, that's right.
We do need to approve this. So I would entertain a motion.
I'll move the item.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. If there's nothing further, roll call vote, please.
Roll call, Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Tran.
Aye.
Director Wiegand.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. We are at item number 10 now. The subject is development of resilience plan and groundwater producer workshop. And I understand Adam Hutchinson will be presenting.
Yes, good afternoon. We will be coming back to the board in August to give you a full presentation. We just wanted to give you a heads up that we did go over the presentation with the groundwater producers today to get their feedback on the plan. And we received a lot of positive comments on it. And so I just wanted to give you guys a heads up that we give that to the producers. We'll be presenting that to you in a month. So that's all we wanted to let you know.
Anything further on that?
I'll just add on that there's a little bit of a change from moving away from a facilities-based plan to a more adaptive strategic plan. It gives us a little bit more flexibility and options as we look forward to the future and the changing conditions. And we are looking for feedback, and we're working on a title, and we're open to feedback and look forward to the board's direction.
Yeah, and this is something we do every 5 years, but we are changing the title and positioning the document differently to help us, better respond to future changing conditions. But it's something we do every 5 years, looking at what projects should we be considering for the future? What programs should we be considering for the future? We sit back in our offices. We came up with like 55 potential projects. We're going to get that down to 16 kind of priority projects and projects that we would put our resources towards evaluating. And if we think any of those projects or programs are worthy, then we would bring them back to the board for consideration. But we want to share those 16 projects with the committee in August.
Okay.
So, and we shared some of them with the producers. The producers have good ideas on projects and what we need for the future. So we wanted to bounce it off of them first this morning. So
you're actively soliciting and requesting suggestions from people, right?
Yes.
During the interim, at least.
Yeah.
Director Sheldon has his hand raised.
Sure, Director Sheldon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the comment on the change from a facility-based to adaptive, can you put some more specificity on that? I wasn't unfamiliar with that, and because it was in the past facility-based. You know, we have this facility, we want to create this facility. What does the adaptive mean versus facility?
So, sounds like you're going virtual.
The thought behind it is that when we sit here and look at the future, there's definitely some uncertainty of what will be happening 20 years from now. Santa Ana River base flows legally could decline by over 40,000 acre feet a year. We've talked about how Prado Dam is, there's a siltation issue, and we could lose our flood control, our water conservation behind Prado Dam if we don't figure out how to deal with all the sediment coming in behind Prado Dam. That could be another 40,000 acre feet a year of lost water supply. As we sit here, we don't know where total water demands will be in the future. They've been slowly declining. Will they continue to decline? Will they hold steady? Will they bounce back? So there's a decent amount of uncertainty where we'll be in 20 years. So this document is more about kind of having shelf-ready projects as needed and positioning ourselves to respond quicker to whatever comes our way in the future. Water quality issues also. What will be the next contaminant that's found that we have to deal with? We could lose water supply because of that. So it's just putting together a document. And also this document is intended to help us get grant funding. But having a document that's more oriented in that direction than what we've done in the past. So,
okay, if I could follow up on that. Thank you, John. Thank you, John.
Okay.
And
okay.
I also wanted to thank Executive Director Haney for responding back to some questions that I had submitted on this item. So, but to go back to this adaptive, what I hear, am I correct to say that we're saying if this happens, we'll do that? So we're not saying, because the long-term plan was always, we plan to do all these particular things. And this program will say, not just are we going to do these particular things, but if we lose water from the river, then we'll do XYZ. If we lose this, we'll do ABC. Is that what I understand you say when you're saying it's adaptive?
Yes, but not that black and white. You know, we'll see what happens in the future, and we'll have a kind of a stable of projects potentially to implement, depending on exactly what happens in the future. But we don't actually say if we lose 40,000 acre feet from the river, this would be the project we would implement. We don't go that far.
You said that, so that's why I'm trying to understand more. Like, is adaptive mean responsive? What is? Can you give us an example of what that means then, please? If that doesn't mean what I said.
Well, from a water supply point of view, right now we're in a very good condition. We have the BPP up to 85%. The basin's full. But if we were to lose water supply in the future, you know, we're looking at what potential projects we could implement. We have the work we're doing with reverse osmosis and trying. We recover 85% of water with reverse osmosis. And Megan Plumley's been doing a lot of work and research to maybe we could get that up to 90% or 93% recovery. So that would increase water supply. We're doing the work with Prado Dam to try to store more water behind Prado Dam. That increases water supply. We're partnering with Mesa, looking at brackish groundwater desalting, putting extraction wells near the coastline. That could create additional local water supply. So those are types of examples of new water supply that we could create if we were to lose some of our existing water supply.
So we're not calling out a specific item that might go away. We're just saying generically, if we lose water supply, these are some program projects that we can do. It's more, you're generally calling it out, not specifically.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Thank
yeah.
you. Okay. That's okay. all.
Okay.
So a five-year plan used to be written in stone, and it's more or less written in sand nowadays, right?
Yeah, it would be very adaptive. And 5 years from now, we may say, oh, these five projects aren't worthy, and we may have new five projects to look at.
Well, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
But more nimble and able to embrace grant opportunities, right? Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Mobile and agile.
Andrew Weisner has a hand up.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. This is, I'm Andrew Weisner with Mesa Water District. And we had an opportunity to, get a preview of this report at the producers meeting and read through it. And, we think it's really great work. And, Mesa Water staff is in full support of this plan. And we do plan to bring it to our board's attention to get their feedback in the next couple of weeks. And just wanted to say thank you for putting this great report together.
Thank you for the comment. I see nothing else doing here. So with that.
If I could just add one more comment. In my time here, from time to time, this long-term, the previous long-term facilities plan would come up in a discussion about some other item. And it was felt by me and I think other directors that it was good foresight by those that had put that plan together, that we had that planning document in our, I don't want to say in our hip pocket, but we had it available to us that we could demonstrate that we were prepared to do this or do that. And so I just want to say, this is an important, very important function that we're doing. It's kind of like a general plan update for a city, if that would be an example. Not completely accurate, but similar. So I think it's important that we all look at it, and it will be useful to us in the future in ways that we're not aware of now.
Okay, thank you, Director
Sheldon.
We are now at item number 11, the Prado Basin Aerial Light Detection and Ranging, LIDAR.
Is Kevin O'Toole present?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Good afternoon. Let me get this shared. 1 second. Looks like it's already mid presentation, so I'll just go back on this a little bit. Good afternoon. My name is Kevin O'Toole. I'm a senior planner here at the Water District, and I work in our planning department. Today, I get to bring to you the committee a technology that OCWD has been exploring called LIDAR, and this is an informational item only. So I'll be walking through how we are looking to use this as a tool in our tool chest to help support our efforts behind Prado Dam, specifically water conservation. So for this presentation, I'm going to try to cover these main points here. What can LIDAR do? How does LIDAR work? What makes it unique? Why are we interested in LIDAR? How are we using it? And what additional opportunities may exist? So to start, I'm going to show a pretty dramatic example here from the state of Washington for how LIDAR is used. So this is, we're all used to seeing these images from applications like Google Maps or otherwise, where we generate images, pictures taken from the air, which is what we're showing here on the left. But what we're seeing on the right is something generated by LIDAR. LIDAR is a data collection effort that allows us to see through the trees and allows us to pick up the very fine contours and topography through that dense vegetation. It's the only technology that we have available that can make this sort of precision topographic maps and allow us to see through that very dense vegetation and give us the real picture of what's happening on the ground surface. So this is one of the many reasons why we're interested in this technology. So next, what is LIDAR? LIDAR stands for light detection and ranging. It allows for this X-ray vision of the ground surface, and it also allows us to generate three-dimensional models. So it works by taking a sensor that pulses lasers that bounce off of a surface and reflect back to the sensor, and it generates a three-dimensional picture based off the time it takes to get there. These sensors pulse thousands of times per second, and so an acquisition of an area like Prado generates billions of data points. So this is really a data collection exercise versus a picture. So a quick comparison of these two. Again, we're all very familiar with the aerial image. This is a passive approach where it takes reflected light, creates a two-dimensional output. It shows us things like color, texture, location in relation to other things. This is an image, and it is interpreted visually. LIDAR, on the other hand, is a very active process with these sensors sending out this light. It gives us this penetrating X-ray quality, a three-dimensional structural output, which gives us something quite unique, which is it gives us structure, volume, and elevation. This is data. And what you see here on the screen is generated by computers processing this information and very educated software developers and a GIS staff, giving us an image that we can then interpret. So a little background on OCWD's LIDAR collection efforts. So we have collected two acquisitions to date. The first one was conducted in July of 2020 in conjunction with our annual aerial flight. We were approached by San Bernardino Valley in this water district, and in support of their Upper Santa River HCP, they collected LIDAR data in conjunction with our acquisition of Prado Basin and the upper watershed. They paid for this 100% to no cost to the district. Again, in July of 2023, OCWD funded another acquisition in conjunction with our aerial flight that we collected in July. The additional cost for LIDAR was $25,000. And what's really interesting about this, and what's really powerful about this, is now with two data sets, we're able to identify changes over time and do some calculations here. So it's a really exciting kind of pilot project for us to look at what we could do with these two data sets. And I mentioned this earlier, but specifically what we're interested in here is how these two data sets from LIDAR can help support our water conservation efforts. As mentioned earlier, and a great segue into this earlier this afternoon, stormwater capture behind Prado could affect vireo nesting habitat and sedimentation. Those are two things we're interested in. And we already have commitments, which was walked through in great detail earlier, requiring us to do monitoring for vireo habitat. And additionally, we have requirements for sediment removal. And as we seek to move WaterCon higher in the basin through efforts like FIRO, we do anticipate those commitments to likely increase. And FIRO, we believe, can assist us in both of those. Excuse me. LIDAR can assist us in both of those. Excuse me, I missed one. But before I move on to what we're doing, I did want to put out an example that I just came across recently from the Department of Water Resources. They used LIDAR and sonar recently to measure the capacity of Lake Orville. Sonar is necessary to look underwater. LIDAR cannot do that. The outcome of this was that the storage capacity was 3% less than they had anticipated. And I'll let John Yarbrough's quote here in the article kind of speak to this. And it's a very similar objective that we have for Prado. But updating storage capacity data allows us to operate Lake Orville in a more efficient manner. It ensures we're providing adequate flood storage protection during winter months and accurately accounts for the state water supply. Very similar goals to what we're looking for with LIDAR. So the application of interest to us, I'm going to walk through a little bit of how this is processed on our end. So we're going to take a segment here of Prado Basin. We're going to show this little yellow line here. What we're going to do is we're going to take that aerial image, we're going to cut it down the side, similar to how you'd cut through a cake. And we're going to turn it on its side so we can look at that and all the data that it generates. And here's an example of what we would see as we cut away the LIDAR data. So what we're able to do right now is we're able to do two primary things. The first is we're able to look at the lowest elevation returns and generate a map or figure topographic surface of the ground surface. This is very interesting to us as it relates to sedimentation. The second portion that we're working on right now is looking at canopy height. So what we're able to see here is that vegetation heights are changing over time between the 3-year period and see where we're identifying changes. You'll notice there's a lot of data in the middle. We are not using that data currently, and that is an opportunity that I'll discuss a little bit later for the future. But there's a lot of opportunity that we can might be able to explore to understand the habitat better. So to start, we look at the ground surface. So just to familiarize the group with this image, we've got Prado Dam at the bottom, OCB wetlands towards the top. The Santa River comes in towards the upper right and kind of serpentines its way down towards the bottom of the figure and then makes a hard left towards Prado Dam. And then there's Corona Airport. I'm going to be showing a similar figure for multiple of these, and I just want to kind of familiarize the group with it before I change. So the next image I'm going to show is showing our first look at LiDAR data, specifically at the ground surface. And this is going to show a difference between the 2020 and the 2023 ground surface elevations. So to walk through this a little bit here, what we're showing is areas that are in the purple spectrum are areas where we've seen decreases or erosion occurring, and areas in the yellows, oranges, and reds where we're seeing sedimentation occurring. What I want to point out here is a couple things. Predominantly is sedimentation is not occurring uniformly throughout the basin. There are areas where it is more pronounced. And this sort of precision in understanding where those sedimentation areas and erosion areas are occurring is just not possible without LiDAR data. Also wanted to point out here, you'll notice the area where we're having quite a bit of a decrease. That is from the sediment demonstration project, which occurred in the summer of 2020. That material from that demonstration project was slurried and pumped to a stockpile location shown in the bottom. And so that's why we see an increase in that area there. It is not the larger orange that we're showing in this map. I just want to show it that project and how we're able to reflect that here in the LiDAR data that we were able to collect. Next, we're going to show an example of how we're using it for the canopy. So same image here, but looking at the tops. So this, again, is the canopy change map between 2020 and 2023. And we see a lot more kind of differences here, where we're seeing areas where we're having the canopy height increase, which is shown in the yellows and reds again, and the canopy also decreasing. This was a little bit concerning when we first saw this map, because the areas where we're seeing decreases could potentially be impacts from our activities behind Prado. So I'm gonna walk through this and kind of how we were able to work through this information. So to start, there were multiple Rondo removal efforts, which are shown here. Two of these were OCWD efforts, and one of those, the lower one, was a core effort. And so when we see these large stands of kind of blocks of purple where we see decreases, that's expected. We knew that was gonna happen and there's no surprises, but there's a lot of area here outside of those known Rondo removal areas that still give us some concern and some problems. And if the board remembers, one of the reasons why we had to discontinue the sediment demonstration project in the fall of 2020 was because there was a fire across the basin. It started at the Corona Airport and worked its way across to the 71. And when we overlay the fire footprint, it's pretty dramatic what we see here. It overlays almost perfectly with the areas where we saw decreases in habitat. So what this really shows and demonstrates is that what we anticipate seeing from the known activities that occurred in the basin, we're able to reflect through this LiDAR generated data. And then what's outside of this fire footprint, which is very encouraging, is we're actually seeing increases in canopy height throughout the basin. And through this period, we've had a couple dry years and a couple wet years, so we're generally seeing an improvement in habitat quality. In addition to the efforts that we've done for water conservation, I also want to point out a handful of other opportunistic uses we've used for LiDAR data. This one is from another project that I oversee called the Lead Remediation Project. And so this area, we're looking to clean up lead, and it's a very topographically challenging area. And so this image on the right is a product that we were able to generate through LiDAR data that shows the slopes here. And the yellows and greens are pretty low slopes. As you get towards the browns and even the whites, the slopes increase dramatically. This has been very helpful in us trying to plan the remediation project and what kind of equipment and processing we'll need to do for the lead remediation project here. This has allowed us to avoid some delays in the project and the expenses of potentially having to go out and hire a contractor to have the site surveyed. One more example, in the fall, sorry, February of 2024, we had a lot of water in the basin, and the Corona Airport reported some localized flooding at the airport. So having this highly detailed topographic map generated by LIDAR allowed us to have some conversations with the airport and the Corps about the potential for the water conservation pool impacting the airport and that observed flooding being from the water con pool or otherwise. Through some of this image and others, we're able to do some more focused investigation in the field and really kind of dispel the concern that the water con pool was having impact directly on the airport. I want to call out the 512 line here. This is what was reached during the fall, the February of 2024. This is also the elevation that we're looking at trying to move FIRO towards for water con purposes. And what I want to take away from here is that 512 line is very close to the airport. The airport is listed at 514. And as we've tried to move FIRO and water conservation higher in the basin, the margin for error is going to become smaller and smaller. And so having the precision for habitat and for sedimentation elevation is going to be a very important tool for us to be able to have conversations with stakeholders to give the core peace of mind and the service peace of mind that we are monitoring sedimentation patterns, the elevations, and really trying to run this up against the top of the allowable limits. Looking towards the future, regionally, there's been a lot more interest in LIDAR and its applications. We've heard a lot more discussions about opportunities. With SAPA and their work that they're doing towards Arundo master planning for the watershed, they've developed a tool that is looking at aerial imaging only to map Arundo through the basin. LIDAR could probably enhance those efforts and make them more precise. And I wanted to show an example at the bottom here, and this is conceptual at this point, but if we can generate a fingerprint for what Arundo looks like, then we could use tools like AI to go out and map Arundo based off of the fingerprint that Arundo shows based off height, density, and structure. Additionally, if we were able to look at and identify vireo nesting habitat, which is ultimately what we're interested in for our water conservation efforts, we can do a more focused effort on how vireo habitat specifically is changing over time, not just habitat in the basin. So we're looking at LIDAR as opportunities to understand our interest in Prado Basin as I support WaterCon and opportunities to get grant funding and partnerships within the watershed. So in a quick summary, what we've shown so far is that LIDAR presents a cost-effective tool to support our efforts to monitor and study Prado Basin. New applications and uses continue to expand, and we're interested in tracking those. And as FIRO looks to move water conservation higher in the basin, large-scale measurements of vireo habitat and sedimentation and the precision that that brings, this can be a very valuable tool in that effort. One last thing to kind of leave on, what you've seen so far today has been generated in-house by our staff. Shout out to our staff. They've been fantastic in their efforts on this, and it's been wonderful. But we're just scratching the surface. And so as we look to utilize more of that LIDAR data forward, there is potential that we would have to come back to the board for more funding and assistance to do things like AI and habitat modeling type work. So with that, concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, thank you for that, Kevin. Any questions? Okay, I usually give him a few.
I have questions. I was waiting for. I have questions. Sure, I'll be.
Yes, go ahead, Director Sheldon.
Yeah, the great presentation. I had some concerns at first, and I think this is going to be beneficial. Correct me if I'm wrong. Beneficial in our overall water conservation or water storage being the same there behind Prado. That's correct? That's the goal here?
Yes.
Thank you. And so I think with light in light of this presentation and the great one that Cheryl Parsons did earlier. My question is kind of for Cheryl. Do you think we could have that mitigation measure modified where we have four FTEs doing the monitoring? We could scale that back a little bit? Not to call
Currently, it is a regulatory requirement, and so we would need to modify or amend that requirement in a future elevation lift. So right now, you know, we're finishing 508. We've closed the window on any modification language for regulations at this point. But as we go into the water control manual update number 2, where we go to 512, we could talk about that as a talking point. Just one reminder, however, as we increase water in the basin, we're also increasing availability of creating new habitat, which means more that we have to monitor. And we actually need the people to monitor that increase in habitat. So I think the need will still be there in the future.
Have you ever considered us being able to receive wetlands mitigation credit?
Yes, I have.
Where someone else has to mitigate, and we can, because we're doing that, we're effectively creating a lot of wetlands. And so someone's got to pay to have that done somewhere else. Can we find a way to tap into that?
Director Sheldon, you're reading my mind. Just presented an idea to the executive staff yesterday for that, and look forward to bringing that to you in September.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that we're relooking at the SAWA document, because I had a lot of questions on it in the past, and I don't feel that they always got answered. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Otherwise, we may find ourselves managing a nature preserve someday, right?
Well, that's...
Kevin, thank you for the presentation. It was very, very interesting and quite complex, but somehow still easier than HR math. And with that, if there's nothing further, I would direct that items 1 through 8 be placed on the consent calendar on July 17th, and item number 9 to be placed on the regular agenda. And with that, we are at the point for directors' announcements, reports. Nope. And general managers' announcements, reports.
Nothing to report.
All right. Well, thank you. With that, we are now adjourned until our next board meeting on this, or no, actually, till tomorrow, right?